There she is, picking a basket full of thistle and a pinch of rosemary. I can hear her talking to herself, too, calculating how much she needs of this or that, and whether to boil, grind, or blend it into a cream. I can see her rushing about with long brown hair streaming behind her, and swinging on a porch rocker that is no longer here. Sometimes a young version of Bucky is by her side, and they are talking and laughing, or sometimes arguing, but mostly she's alone. Her hair gradually turns white as snow as season after season flies by in a blur. I shake my head to get rid of the ghostly images. It doesn't work. Tara is talking to me, so I force myself to focus on what she's saying.
"My mom has been taking care of the garden since a few days after Angelina left," she says. "I help her sometimes, so if you tell me what you need, I can show you where it is." "I thought your mom hated Angelina,"
Leo asks her.
"Don't say hate," Rory and Tara reply at the same time.
"Sorry,"
he says, holding up his hands.
"I thought your mom strongly disliked Angelina after that whole ruining her life thing."
"Yeah, I know," Tara says. "I think coming here gives her some sort of closure. It brings her life full circle or something.
Hey, look!"
She points up to the top of one of the trees in front of the house. "It's Flo and Max, and they're not frozen." We all watch as the two hawks swoop down from the tree and land on the edge of the empty birdbath in the center of the yard. They start grooming each other as though they're yanked out of the normal stream of time every day.
"Did you bring them with us on purpose?"
Connor asks me. I shake my head. I don't want to tell him that I didn't bring any of them on purpose either. If I did, I would have brought Bailey, too. She always has good ideas, and I could use one right about now.
"Holy hamsters, Batman!"
Bailey exclaims from somewhere behind me.
"So this is the kind of thing you guys are always talking about."
I whirl around so fast my neck hurts. There she is, standing beside the birdbath, holding what looks like a cup of lemonade with ice. We all stare in shocked silence. Then Leo sticks out his finger and pokes her on the arm.
Ouch,
she says, rubbing the spot. Leo grins.
"Yep, she's real."
"How did you get here?" I ask. Bailey shakes her head.
"Couldn't tell ya. One minute I was in study hall doodling my name on my sneaker."
She pauses to lift one leg up to show us her name in purple sparkly gel pen.
"Then the next I was here with you fine folks and this refreshing icy beverage."
She lifts the glass in a toast.
"Here's to freaky magic stuff."
"It's my first time too,"
David admits after she drains her cup.
"I was starting to think all Grace could do was make pizza."
Tara kicks him in the shin.
"And cure your dad," she says.
"Well, that too,"
he admits, winking at me. We all laugh, and for a second I almost forget why we're here, but only for a second. I bend down to look over the names of the herbs printed on tiny wooden sticks. I can't even pronounce half of them. "I wish Angelina had left a book of instructions," I mutter. Then I look up at the group, hopefully. They all shake their heads. I knew it was a long shot.
"Have you ever been inside Angelina's house?" Bailey asks me. "Maybe she did leave something for you."
"Amanda and I are pretty good at climbing in windows,"
Leo volunteers. I get to my feet. Knowing Angelina, she'd have a shark with its mouth open waiting under the window.
"No crime on my watch,"
Ray says.
"I'm too pretty to go to jail."
Amanda and Tara roll their eyes.
"What if the key to the store isn't actually the key to the store?" Bailey asks. "What if you got it wrong and it's the key to the house?"
I hesitate. That would explain why I haven't been able to get into the shop. But then I shake my head. "I don't think so. Angelina's letter said the key would
open doors to wonders unimagined, and that Tara would know where to use it. So it's got to be the store.
I agree, Tara says. I've never been inside her house.
We could still try it,
Amanda says, stuffing what looks like a clump of blue flowers into her pocket.
If Angelina ever said exactly what she meant, I'd fall over in shock.
Can't argue with that, Rory says. It feels a little weird, though, to go in without permission.
Bailey pulls the pouch with the key out of her back pocket and holds it out to me.
I look at Tara. She shrugs.
Angelina moves in mysterious ways. If there's something in there that could help you, I think you should do it.
I look back to Rory. She hesitates, then nods. Okay, I'll try. I take the key from Bailey and slowly climb the porch steps. With each step, I feel the pull of the house getting stronger, as if I'm being tugged by some unseen rope. One more strong yank, and I'm suddenly standing right in front of the door. I turn around to look at the others and see myself still standing on the second step, frozen, with one foot in the air. The rest of Team Grace is frozen, too. How can we be frozen in time when we're already out of time? How can I be both here and there? I really should stop asking questions I have no hope of knowing the answers to. I put my hand on the door, and it opens without me even using the key. Instead of the wooden floor and painted walls I would have expected to see in an old house, I find myself in a lush tropical garden that smells of ripe grapefruit and the sea. A circle of stone benches surrounds the garden. In the distance, I can see the beach and can just make out the sound of the surf lapping at the shoreline. It is the most beautiful and relaxing place I have ever been. And I have been here before. When I lay frozen in bed the week after my birthday, feeling the vortex's power run through my veins, I wasn't in the hospital or in my bedroom. I was here. This garden paradise. This is the place that kept me safe and sane. And I had forgotten all about it. The benches are empty, except for one. I should be surprised to see her here, duck-shaped birthmark and all. But somehow, I'm not. Are you real? I ask Angelina. She smooths out the long brown dress she's wearing.
That depends. Quantum physics tells us reality is actually not real at all. What we think of as solid matter turns out to be invisible waves of energy existing in a field of mathematical possibilities. Once you choose a direction, only then does it become real.
That's a little beyond my fifth grade science unit.
Perhaps,
she agrees.
But you will need to know this one day, so don't forget it.
I've already half forgotten it now. My bare feet sink a little deeper into the soft white sand. Where am I? I ask. Are we actually inside your house? She shakes her head.
You are nowhere. And you are everywhere.
I cross my arms. Seriously? That's the answer you're going with? First quantum physics, and now nowhere and everywhere? She chuckles.
We are in your power center, my feisty little friend. Your higher self, if you will. You built this place with your imagination. But you breathed life into it, and now it's as real as any place else. When you're ready, this is where you will come to focus your power. For now, it waits.
I'm ready, I tell her. What's it waiting for?
For you to get stronger, young Grace. What is the rush to end your childhood? Ask your friend Rory how well that worked for her. The turning of the planet will march you inevitably forward either way. I've been alive more than a century, and it still doesn't feel like enough.
It's not like I don't want to spend my days playing with Bailey, sewing funny outfits, and dancing really badly. But I am part of something much bigger than myself now, and no amount of ignoring that fact is going to change it. She taps her foot, waiting for an answer. But I don't know how much to tell her about wanting to make my parents forget, or about the big thing that I want to be prepared for when it comes, especially when I have no idea what that big thing is. Meanwhile, Angelina reaches for a glass beside her. Ice cubes clink against the sides as she sips. Good thing my imaginary power center is polite enough to offer drinks to its guests.
You surprise me, Grace,
she says after emptying the glass.
You are already stronger than I thought you would be so soon after draining your power. You have your own secrets, as I had mine. Soon you will begin to see where your gifts are needed. It may happen differently for you than it did for me. Time will tell.
I really am ready, I repeat.
You may or may not be, she says, sounding a bit bored now. There are many ways to connect to the source. Each will strengthen your connection to the power in a different way and will help you learn to control it. Experiment. Train yourself. Offer gratitude.
Okay, that's vague, but at least it sounds like a start. So, how exactly am I supposed to do all that? She shakes her head at me.
Doesn't anyone go to the library anymore?
Before I can argue that I was, in fact, just at the library last week to return the summer reading books Rory picked out for me, I am whisked out of the garden until I'm back inside my body, the key still unused in my hand. Wait! A voice shouts as I reach one hand out to the porch railing to steady myself. At first, I think it's my voice calling out to Angelina, but Rory is the one shouting. I force myself to focus on being back in the front yard. The others are all moving around like normal again. They must not have noticed anything different while I was gone. Rory runs up the steps and grips my arm. Wait, she repeats. I don't think the answer's inside. Look. She faces me toward Angelina's garden. At first, I don't see anything different. But then, Max swoops down low, grabs a clump of purple stalks in his beak, and drops them into the center of the birdbath. Flo approaches from the other side and adds a batch of green stems with tiny white flowers at the ends. Then they both fly off to different parts of the garden and do it all over again. You may not know how to make a forgetting potion, Rory says, but they do.
Amanda.
Dear Diary. So it wasn't even a full week before Grace pulled us out of time and brought us to Angelina's house. I'm not blaming her, but I'm not even really sure why she needed all of us there. I was trying to be normal for a change, sitting in biology class, learning about DNA and how the human genome has a blueprint for not only our bodies, but also for all of life on the planet hidden inside it, when suddenly the plastic double helix that Mrs. Robinson was holding up stopped swaying in midair.
Sweet,
Leo said from his stool next to me. He waved his hand in front of the faces of the two kids sitting across from us at the lab table.
Guess we have Grace to thank for this break from learning.
Biology and lunch are the only times I see Leo during the day. When it was time to choose lab partners, none of the other kids even glanced our way, like they wouldn't have even considered asking either of us. So we chose each other.
We've been choosing each other since the day we were born. But actually, when you think about it, we didn't really have a choice at all. It wasn't like we were waiting up in heaven, or wherever you wait before you're born, if there is such a place, and said, let's be born on the same day, and be best friends, and later, girlfriend and boyfriend. At least, I'm pretty sure we didn't. I sound like I'm complaining. I don't mean to. I don't think I mean to. When I was 11, Kylie told me being 13 is hard. She was so right. I never thought I'd miss being younger, and I definitely like the independence of 13. But I could do without feeling like sometimes I don't know myself anymore. Like Stephanie's pool party. It was okay, and her friends were nice to me and all. But I wish it had been just the two of us. Sometimes I would catch her eye across the pool and know she was thinking the same thing. I don't really talk to her about Leo, even when we are alone. When one person has a boyfriend and the other doesn't, it just comes out sounding obnoxious when you complain about yours. Anyway, so after everyone turned all statue-like, Leo hopped off his stool and shouted something like, "The adventure begins!" But all I said was, "Didn't Grace say she wouldn't need us for a while?" And Leo said,
"I guess she said that, but you know how these things go."
And Diary, let me tell ya, I do know how these things go. I told Leo to go ahead and I would meet him.
"Okay,"
he said. He hesitated, though, and I knew he didn't want to leave me behind, so I said, "Hey, maybe there'll be pizza." He squeezed my hand and ran out. As soon as he left the room, I took out the folded piece of paper I've carried in my backpack for a week. I've read the phone number over and over. I still haven't called it yet. I tucked it back away and then ran out to join the others. At Angelina's house, Leo kept looking at me, and I know he was wondering if everything was okay, but he didn't ask, which I'm glad about. I was also glad when Grace wound up not going inside. It just felt wrong. I don't know when Angelina is going to be home, but entering her house without asking felt like invading her privacy. I think the key is for the store, anyway. So then, Diary, things took a weird turn, as though all the rest wasn't weird enough. But that's my life, I guess. Measuring things in weird, weirder, weirder still, and weirdest. Anyway, we got back to school, and Grace told us to count to 100 before she started time up again. That way, we'd all have a chance to get back where we were before it happened, and no one around us would notice anything. David had to go back to the bathroom and lock himself in a stall, which was kind of funny. So Leo and I got back to biology class, and something about the way he looked at me as we climbed up onto our stools made me feel a little dizzy and warm. I glanced quickly around the room to make sure everyone was still frozen. Leo was counting out loud,
78, 79, 80.
Before he could say 81, I leaned over and pressed my cheek against his cheek. I closed my eyes. He wound his fingers through my hair, and the dizzy feeling grew. We stayed like that, him breathing the numbers out into my ear, me just breathing.
98, 99.
I pulled away, and we both turned to face Mrs. Robinson, who continued telling the class about the miracle of life.
Rory.
Rory, check this out. Teen Scene Today by I Am Sneaky Pete. Teen hottie Jake Harrison and teen queen Madison Waters have been spotted holding hands and dancing till the wee morning hours at L.A.'s hottest dance club, Hot Potato, after their well-received appearance on The Late Show. Madison told partygoers she's never been happier with Jake than she is right now. Is this on-again, off-again couple on-again? All signs point to yes.
Annabelle, you're going to make yourself crazy if you believe everything you read about him. There's not even a picture. I know, but I texted him this morning to see if it was true, and he didn't answer. It's the middle of the night there. Plus, if that article is true, which I'm sure it's not, then he might still be out dancing. Bleh, frowny face. Honestly, I'm not sure mere mortals are supposed to be in a relationship with movie stars. I know, it's crazy-making. Hold on, doorbell. Probably paperboy wanting to be paid. What's a paperboy? Been 5 minutes. Forget about me. Rory! Hello! I'm just going to start singing until you come back. La 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 la, this is my song. Do re mi fa sol la ti, ti do, ti do, ti do. OMG, I think I'm losing my mind. 20 minutes now. So sorry. Finally, paperboy, whatever that is. No, guess again. Sunshine kid selling cookies? Early trick-or-treater? Nope. I give up.
Hey, Annabelle, this is Jake. How are ya?
Huh? What?
Came to surprise Rory. Surprise!
Aren't you in Hollywood right now? You know, dancing up a storm with Uber Witch Madison? I mean, that lovely girl, Madison?
Only if Hollywood is in Willow Falls these days. And judging by the lack of tan skin and fake blonde hair, I'm gonna say it's not.
But there's no way you could have gotten here so fast after the show and the dancing.
They filmed those shows in the afternoon, then air them later. And it wasn't me with Madison. It's my new lookalike, a kid named Carson. Now I can be in two places at once. Voila! Magic!
Okay, then. You know it's a school day, though, right? Did you miss our school so much you felt the overwhelming urge to come back?
LOL. Your school is not without its charms, but no. Here's Rory.
Okay, it's me again. My parents said we can skip school today. Sawyer is losing his mind, excited. We're all going hiking at the reservoir. Have fun! Try not to fall into the water. I'll do my best. XOX. Leo.
Ode to Our Compost Heap, Part 1, by Leo Fitzpatrick. O compost heap, you are so smelly, full of worms and dung and bones and jelly. But we're doing our part to save the world, or so I'm told. The thing that I like most about you is the time I spend thinking while shoveling your goo. I don't only think about eating, you know, even though most people would think so. My head is full of other stuff, like sometimes with Amanda, things get tough. A teenage girl must be a hard thing to be. They worry about things that are foreign to me. I prefer to keep life simple, although I really could do without this pimple. Ode to Our Compost Heap, Part 2. Washing off the sweat and dirt always puts me in a happy mood. Life is simpler when you work the earth by turning garbage into plant food. I will bring some compost up to Apple Grove for our little trees struggling to take hold. I've never told Amanda this in case she doesn't feel the same, but those trees are a part of us, and I've given each a name. Bert and Hortense and Morris and Sue, Mac and Anne and Phil. Okay, so those last lines don't rhyme, but really, there's no crime, because yesterday I got pulled from time. And if time had stopped forever during those last 10 seconds, with my hand in her hair and her breath in my ear, I wouldn't have minded a bit.
Tara. Dear Julie, my dad and I drove all the way home, to our old home,
to arrange for the moving people. The house sold in less than a week. Apparently, the people who bought it are huge fans of my dad and simply had to own the house where "My Mailman Was the Leader of the Alien Zombie Apocalypse" was written. My dad said now that I'm 13, I can start reading his books. I'm not sure I want to, though. What if I don't like them? That would make for some awkward dinner table conversation. Smiley face. Maybe you can read them? WBS, Tara. P.S. About David? He makes me a nicer person. How's that for mushy? I haven't seen him as much as I thought I would, but he's been really busy with his dad, and I've been busy moving, so, you know. It's okay, though. Not every couple can be glued at the hip like Amanda and Leo.
Chapter 5. Grace.
The thing about making a forgetting spell is that I have no idea how to do it. Sure, the hawks gave me the ingredients, but being able to understand the language of birds must not be in my job description. And don't think I didn't try, because I did. I asked them what I should do with the herbs and flowers they gave me, but they just made this loud "cree" sound, which was like the bird equivalent of rolling their eyes, and flew off. Tara offered to ask her mom if she knew anything about preparing potions. After all, it was a potion from Angelina that indirectly led to their family moving here. Plus, her mom knows a lot about gardens and herbs. Mrs. Brennan was happy to help, so now I have a whole list of instructions.
"Ready?"
Bailey asks, rolling up her sleeves. She's come over to help me prepare the potion. The first step was to dry out the herbs and flowers, so they've been hanging upside down in small bundles in my closet for a week. I was afraid Mom would find them when she put away my clothes, but she's been so distracted lately, I don't think she's done laundry all week, or maybe all month. I'm down to one clean sock. When I unclip the herbs from the hanger, a few stiff white petals fall to the floor. I can't take any chances on messing up the recipe, so I crawl around the closet and pick them out of the carpet. Suddenly, a low, rumbly voice reaches my ears. I duck my head out of the closet. "Did you say something?" I ask Bailey. She shakes her head. I crawl back in to get the last leaf and hear it again. A man's voice, for sure.
"Just give me one more chance,"
he says.
"I won't let you down."
"Bailey," I call out in a loud whisper. "I think someone is trying to reach out to me. I'm hearing voices."
"So am I,"
she whispers back. My eyes widen. "You are? Maybe you share my powers because you're my best friend."
"Pretty sure that's not it," she says, pointing to the back of the closet. "It's coming from in there."
We push past the hanging clothes and press our ears up to the back wall. Sure enough, the voice comes through again.
"One more day, Mr. Murphy. You'll see. Things at home have been..."
He pauses, and I picture him stopping to gulp down what's probably his 10th coffee of the day.
"Difficult,"
he finishes. "Mr. Murphy is my dad's boss," I whisper, my heart thumping. "I thought your dad was still at work," Bailey whispers back.
"So did I."
We wait for another minute, but my dad must have gotten off the phone or moved farther away from his bedroom wall. I grab Bailey's sleeve and tug her through the clothes again.
"That didn't sound good,"
she says, once we've closed the closet door behind us.
"It sounds like he might get fired."
I don't answer. I have a tight ball in the pit of my stomach. I stuff the crumbly herbs into the bowl I'd snagged from the kitchen earlier.
"Let's hurry up with this. Looks like we don't have any time to waste. We have to save my dad's job."
Half an hour later, we've ground the herbs into a fine powder using a rock and a bowl, soaked them in vinegar, strained them with my last remaining sock,
and are in the process of drying them in my easy-bake oven. We could dry them in the microwave, but I don't want to risk running into a parent. Plus, the easy-bake oven still smells like the chocolate chip cookie Bailey and I made in there when we were 7. Before the vortex, baking that cookie in my toy oven was the most magical thing that had happened to me. Well, that and meeting Jake Harrison. Connor's voice floats in from the hall.
It's me,
he says, knocking on the door.
Can I come in?
He never used to knock. I kind of wish he hadn't started treating me differently, but I can't blame him. My parents are obviously taking it the hardest, but having a sister in my situation can't be easy on him. I open the door and yank him inside. He wrinkles his nose.
Why does it smell like Easter eggs in here?
Bailey holds up the jar of vinegar. We're making the forgetting potion, I explain. He bends down to peer inside the toy oven.
You know that's just a 100-watt light bulb in there, right? It's not actually cooking anything.
We totally baked a cookie in there once, Bailey says, jutting out her lip.
No, you didn't, he says. I switched it out with a store-bought one when you guys weren't looking.
I put my hand over my ears. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. He picks up the list of instructions.
Why do you need to dry them twice if you're making tea? Won't they just get wet again?
I glance over at the list. There does seem to be a lot of drying and wetting and drying again going on. Connor whips out his phone.
I'll call Tara and ask.
A few seconds later, he says,
Yo, new girl, what's with this potion recipe you gave my little sis? Is it legit?
He pauses to listen for a minute.
Okay, roger that.
He slips the phone in his pocket and looks over to me.
Yeah, her mom may have guessed on a few steps.
I frown at the soggy mess inside the oven.
Maybe you can just put it in the tea now, he suggests. That should be fine, right?
I shake my head slowly, not taking my eyes off the oven. A vision is unfolding in front of my eyes of me using the mixture. A brief snapshot, but it's enough. I'm not putting it into tea after all, I tell them confidently.
But Grace, Bailey says, you heard your dad. He could lose his job. Your mom's a mess. And everyone's always bugging you at school about the hospital and whispering about how you grew 4 inches in one summer and...
I look up in surprise. I didn't think anyone at school noticed that.
Trust me, she says. Everyone noticed. You really need to...
Wait a second,
Connor interrupts.
You heard Dad say he might lose his job?
I nod. Sorry I didn't tell you right away. I didn't want to worry you.
It's not your job to protect me all the time,
Connor says. It's the closest he's come to snapping at me since all this started. It kind of is my job to protect him, but I'm smart enough not to point that out. Instead, I say calmly, anyway, I didn't mean I'm not going to do the spell, only that no one needs to drink it. Turns out, it isn't for our parents. It's for me. Connor and Bailey exchange their Grace has lost it again look.
What do you mean, for you? Bailey asks. Are you going to try to make yourself forget?
I shake my head. I just had a vision of me asleep with the herbs under my pillow.
A vision?
Connor asks.
What do you mean?
How can I explain? Maybe I shouldn't have said anything. I'm never sure what to tell and what to keep. I don't want to freak them out, or the other extreme, make them jealous. So I wind up keeping a lot from them. I still haven't told anyone about seeing Angelina in that garden at her house. That didn't feel like a vision, though. Not in the way that this did. That felt like I was really in the garden with her. A vision is when a picture pops into my head, I explain. Like, I'll see a scene that hasn't happened yet, or I'll see someplace different from where I am.
Does this happen a lot?
Connor asks, his voice thick with concern. I shake my head. I won't ask his definition of a lot.
That's good,
he says.
I'm sure that'd be real distracting.
To change the subject, I ask Bailey if she has the pouch with the key in it. She reaches into her backpack and roots around for it.
You're trying to get in the store again?
She asks, handing me the pouch. Not yet, I reply, as I pull out the key and tuck it into my desk drawer. I think I'll know when it's time to go back there. I open the oven door and slide out the little tray. The mixture is only a little drier than when we stuck it in there. I place my hands over the tray and focus on pushing warmth out through my palms. In seconds, the mixture is dry again. I let my hands fall to my sides. Connor breathes in sharply.
Wow, how did you do that?
I don't know, I admit. I just suddenly knew I could. Before they can ask anything else that I won't know the answer to, I grab the pouch and pour the dried herbs into it. Then I head over to the bed and stuff the pouch under my pillow. Tonight's the night. Dinner is very quiet. Mom and Dad basically push food around their plates the whole time. Dad is wearing sweatpants instead of his business suit. It's like he's given up already. I don't have to be a mind reader to know Connor and I are thinking the same thing. This spell better work. Connor comes into the bathroom later while I'm brushing my teeth.
Are you ready?
He asks.
Did your vision thingy show you what's going to happen?
I shake my head and spit into the sink. All I saw was me sleeping with the pouch under my pillow.
Did it show you with your mouth open and drooling?
I punch him in the arm. He doesn't seem fazed.
I know, he says, backing away. It showed you snoring and talking in your sleep, right?
I wait until his mouth is full of toothpaste. Keep it up, big brother. Maybe I'll add to the forgetting spell that you forget how to tie your shoes. He tries to answer, but I run out before he gets the chance. I don't really mind him teasing me, even though I do not drool in my sleep. Teasing is still better than him treating me like a fragile creature that's going to break any second. I climb into bed, and once I get used to my head being higher on my pillow than usual, I relax pretty quickly. With my eyes closed, I try to clear my mind of all the worries of the day. There were a lot. After a few minutes, I start thinking about my garden and how Angelina said that's where my power is waiting for me. But how do I get back there? I've tried imagining myself walking into Angelina's house again, but each time I do, I just see a regular house, no tropical garden in sight. When I had visited the garden while I was in the coma, I hadn't made any specific effort to get there. I was just there. Maybe I'm making it too complicated. Angelina said the garden was my higher self. What is a higher self? It's got to be higher than my regular self, right? Okay, so what are some ways to go up? An airplane? A staircase? Before I know it, I'm picturing myself stepping into an elevator. It's carpeted with gleaming mahogany walls. Like a regular elevator, there are buttons to press for each floor. Only these don't have numbers on them. Not helpful, imagination. I take a chance and press the top button. Speakers pipe out light jazz music as the elevator rises. I find myself tapping my foot along to the beat. After what feels like a long time, a bell dings. The doors slide open to reveal a whiteness so blinding, so utterly all-encompassing, that for a second I forget where I am and who I am. All is completely quiet, and yet it's the loudest place I've ever been. Or at least I think it is, since I have no memory of being anywhere other than here. Then the doors automatically swoosh closed, and the walls, floor, and ceiling of the elevator reappear. I blink and take a breath. I may have gone a bit too high.
Chapter 6 Grace.
With a shaking finger, I press the middle button. The elevator descends slowly. Ding! Then swoosh! The fresh breeze reaches me first, followed by the smell of flowers and ocean air. My garden! I hurry out before the doors can close again. The stone benches are gone, and in their place are a row of beach chairs. Three tropical birds with long orange feathers have taken up residence in the nearby palm trees. I reach out, and an icy lemonade appears in my hand. I take a sip. Ah, refreshing. I could get used to this. I wander around the garden, feeling the sand and soft grass beneath my feet. In the same way that I knew how to dry out the herbs with my hands, I know that every single person has a place like this inside them. Most people will never find it because they don't even know to look for it. I could hang here all day, just exploring. But I'm not here on vacation. I have a mission. Reluctantly, I give a pat on the head to the fluffy orange kitten that has appeared in my arms and lay him down on a patch of clovers. Then I walk over to the beach and look around my feet until I find a stick with a pointy end. The tide has just gone out, leaving a swath of wet sand along the shoreline. I think about all the people who love me and who are rooting for me, and imagine a bubble of light surrounding each of them, protecting them, keeping them safe. I let my mind wander back to the moment my parents brought me to the hospital on my birthday. I had just been hit with all my powers, and I was slipping away. I knew where they were taking me, and I knew they were so scared, but I had no way of telling them they shouldn't worry. Their joy when I awoke quickly turned to fear and worry when they learned about my powers and how much responsibility was now on my shoulders. I know they were happy I had been able to help cure David's father, but they weren't shy about letting me know they wished the vortex had chosen someone else's daughter. I can't give them that, but maybe I can give them this. I hold the stick like a giant pencil, and in my best handwriting, I write the word forget. As I craft each letter, I imagine myself pulling the memories of the last 2 months from my parents' heads, like a spool of thread, unraveling. Then I stitch the gaps together so they don't feel the loss of time. Once the word is complete, I lie down on the sand next to it and close my eyes. When I open them again, I'm in my bedroom like I never left, which I guess I didn't. It's still dark, and my alarm clock reveals it's not yet midnight. My door flies open, and I sit upright. The light on in the hall reveals the shape of Connor standing in my doorway in his pajamas with the Minecraft characters all over them. Maybe the knocking before entering thing wasn't so bad. What is it? I ask him, squinting.
You have to see this, he says. Come on!
I hurry out of bed and follow him down the hall. What is it? I ask. Is everything okay? He waves for me to follow him down the stairs, and then stops halfway, just far enough to let us peek into the living room below. Look! One of Dad's favorite classic rock songs is playing from the portable speaker on the coffee table. I haven't heard music in the house in 2 months. That in itself would be a good sign that the spell worked. But what seals the deal is the fact that my parents are dancing in their pajamas around the living room.
You did it,
Connor says, squeezing my arm. Let's go back up, I reply. I think they want to be alone. We giggle like when we were little kids and sneak back up the stairs. We run back into my room and have just shut the door behind us when my cell phone starts ringing.
"Do you have some big secret life I don't know about?"
Connor jokes.
"Who would be calling you at midnight?"
"I have no idea," I reply, "but I'm pretty sure I only have one secret life." I grab my phone from the dresser and turn it over to see the caller's name. "It's David," I tell Connor as I press the speakerphone button. At the same time, Connor and I ask, "Is everything okay?" David starts talking so fast, I can barely make out his words. I think he's crying, too. "Slow down," I ask. "I don't understand. Your grandfather what?"
"There's a picture of my grandfather on my night table,"
he shouts. "That's good that you're close," I reply, not sure what to say.
"No, you don't understand,"
he cries.
"My grandfather died when my father was 3 years old. I never met him. But now he's alive and living in Florida, and I went to the zoo with him, and we pet a giraffe. It's in the photograph."
What he's saying finally sinks in. Connor must have gotten it at the same time, because he inhales sharply and sits down on the bed.
"And that's not all,"
David says.
"All the piles of paperwork and news articles and old medicines of my dad's, they're all gone, like they never existed. The house is filled with other stuff that was never here, games and books and sports stuff, and a huge family tree on the wall going back to the founding of Willow Falls. Did you know it was originally going to be called Willow Hills? Anyway, we never moved away after my great-great-grandfather got sick, because he never got sick. It looks like that forgetting potion not only made all the doctors forget about my dad, it made the disease forget about itself. You did that, Grace."
He's full on crying now.
"You saved my whole family."
I'm so speechless that I just let the phone fall to the carpet. Connor swoops it up.
"Hold on, buddy,"
he says to David before turning to me.
"Are you going to be okay, little sis, savior of a long line of Goldberg men? Why don't you get back in bed?"
I let him lead me back to my bed and help me climb in. I curl up around Green Bunny, my bedtime companion since I was 4. Connor pats me and then the bunny on the head.
"You did good,"
he whispers, then takes the phone with him and shuts the door. My head is spinning. When I made my parents forget about me having special powers, that meant they had to forget about me healing David's dad. And I guess by doing that, they had to forget he was ever sick. Like a stack of dominoes falling over, one event undid another, until the first person in David's family to get the disease, his great-great-grandfather, never got it. Tears start to slide out of the sides of my eyes, a mixture of relief, gratitude, and amazement, along with a little bit of fear at the power I seem to be able to wield. After a few minutes, it occurs to me that I can't feel the lumps of herbs under my pillow anymore. I sit up, turn on the lamp, and lift the pillow. The pouch is still there, but it's flat. I unzip it and peer inside. The herbs are completely gone, not even one ground-up flower wedged in a corner. What is there, however, is a postcard. I pull it out. Instead of the huge rocks of Stonehenge on the front, 3 giant stone pyramids stare up at me, along with the words, "Greetings from the Great Pyramids of Egypt." I flip it over to find only one sentence scribbled on the back in Angelina's unmistakable handwriting.
"The student has surpassed the teacher."
I peer closer. On the very bottom are 2 more words in letters so small I have to hold the postcard up to the lamp to read them.
"Thank you."
I trace the final words with my fingers. I know why she's thanking me. She can finally let go of the guilt of not being able to cure David's great-great-grandfather. I am grateful that I can give that to her, but I can't help worrying, too. Who am I to play with people's lives in this way? I'm thrilled for the Goldbergs, of course, but what about all the other people I didn't help? I keep dwelling on this question as my hand slides over the letters. Ouch! I yelp, yanking my hand away. It felt like a little spark jumped off the paper and into my finger. I look back down at the card, expecting to see a scorch mark. Instead, there are new words where the large blank space used to be.
Young Grace, these questions are too big for you to ask. The Vortex chose us for reasons that are its own. Perhaps we will know them one day, or perhaps not. Until then, trust.
I touch my fingers gently to the words. I don't get a shock this time. I'll try, I whisper. Good night, Angelina. But the postcard stays silent.
Amanda.
Dear Diary, I have a lot to catch you up on, good and not so good. First, whenever I see David at school, he's grinning so wide his cheeks must hurt. He showed all of us his big family tree on his wall, and it's amazing. I see his parents around town, and everyone treats them like they've always been there. It's so weird, but very cool. On the Team Grace front, we've been pretty much all doing our own thing. Grace has been lying low since her forgetting spell worked so well. She and Bailey have been off doing normal kid stuff, which is really great. I ran into them at the Willow Falls Diner eating chocolate chip pancakes, and they had chocolate all over them, and they didn't even mind. That's what it's like at their age. I remember when I didn't care, and it wasn't even so long ago. Tara and Rory cornered me in the cafeteria last week and asked me if everything was okay, because I've been kind of quiet lately, and I said that everything's fine, but I'm not so sure it is. Something happened today that I feel really weird about. That's the not-so-good thing I said was coming. A week or two after school started, I saw this flyer at the music store when I stopped in to get new drumsticks. The flyer said some kids from the high school were forming a band and needed a drummer. You know how I'm good friends with the owners of the store, Larry and Lawrence? Remember how they always said one day I'd be old enough to be in a real band? I guess since you're a diary and not a real person, you wouldn't know that. But trust me, they did say that. Still, I wasn't really going to do it because between homework and Leo and Team Grace and marching band, I don't really have time, even if I did get in, which I probably wouldn't. Anyway, then Kylie saw the flyer on my desk. I thought she was going to tell me I was crazy and that I'd never make it. But she told me that even though she didn't really get how banging the drums was music, other people seemed to think I had talent, and hadn't I always said I wanted to be in a band that didn't march? Leo texted me while I was riding my bike over to the audition, but I didn't answer. I didn't want to lie and make up some reason why I wasn't home. I just wanted this to be mine. The downstairs room of the music store was full of people practicing on invisible drums while they waited their turn. There were some other girls, but I was the youngest by a few years. I'll cut to the chase, Diary. I didn't make the band. But as I was leaving, this guy in Kylie's grade asked if I wanted to get coffee and talk about playing the drums. I don't get coffee because, ick, it's so gross. And also, Rory once drank way too much and went, like, totally bonkers. And we should really learn from the mistakes of our friends. But did I mention the guy was really cute and boys don't ask me out? And it's not because they know about Leo. It's because they just don't. Or haven't, before this, anyway. Also, I heard Kylie's voice in my head telling me I should go, because she always says you never know if the perfect guy for you is just around the corner, and I know she thinks I'm with Leo just because he's comfortable. So I said okay to the guy whose name was Christian or Tristan or Justin. It was loud in the music store when he first told me his name. We went down the street to the Friendly Bean, a coffee shop in town that the high school kids go to, but where I've never been. We both got iced teas, and he made some joke about how he should have invited me for tea instead of coffee, but then we'd sound like little old ladies. I laughed. That joke was the high point of the date, because, diary, I swear, not 5 minutes after we sat down, Leo's mother walks in and orders a coffee. Darn this small town. She saw me at the exact second I saw her, so there was no chance of ducking. I'd describe her first reaction as surprised and happy to see me, then her second one as just surprise, then her third as confusion, then her fourth as embarrassment. I would describe mine as horror, followed by more horror, and then even more horror. She gave me a little wave and left without even getting her coffee. Christian Tristan Justin was talking about this new snare drum he's saving up to buy at the music store, but my head was buzzing and I couldn't hear him. When I got home from the date, or whatever it was, I told Kylie what happened, and I thought she was going to say I was stupid for even worrying about it, since I'm my own person, and Leo is Leo, and he'll always be there. But instead, she threw a pillow at me and yelled, "What is wrong with you? You have a perfectly good boyfriend and you risk messing it up?" Well, diary, my mouth fell open on that one. When I tried to argue that she was the one who said I shouldn't let Leo hold me back, she said, "Don't listen to me. I've never had someone love me since I was born, like you have. I mean, except for family, of course, and that doesn't count." I tried to argue that, of course, family counts, but I knew that wasn't really her point. "It was just coffee," I argue. Then she says, "How would you feel if Leo didn't reply to your text and then went out for just coffee with some random girl?" Feeling defiant, I crossed my arms and said, "I wouldn't care. He's his own person, and we're only 13. We have our whole lives ahead of us." "That's right," she said. "And you can either have it with someone you love and who loves you even when you're a pain in the butt, which you've been lately, or you can spend it trying to replace that person. Your choice." She's right. I know she's right. So, of course, I stormed out of her room, and that's why I'm writing this to you. Maybe Mrs. Fitzpatrick didn't tell Leo she saw me. That's possible, right? Leo.
Heartbreak and Despair by Leo Fitzpatrick. She doesn't even like coffee. I admit it. My heart does kinda ache. It actually feels like it's going to break. I've been here before, but I guess I'm back for more. Why was she with some other guy? I've got to man up. I can't start to cry. I know 3 years ago I hurt her really bad. I hope she didn't feel half this sad. She's my best friend, and I'll stand by her to the end. I just want her to be happy, even if it makes me feel crappy. I hope the guy had bad breath.
Rory.
Annabelle, don't freak out.
Rory, how can I not freak out if you start a text with "don't freak out"?
Just do your best, and remember, it doesn't mean anything.
Just tell me.
Remember a few weeks ago when Jake surprised you, and then your family brought him hiking down near the reservoir, and you fell, and he had to carry you out?
I didn't fall. I was just showing him the drainpipe I got stuck in that one time, and then
Okay, I sort of fell. What about it? Wait, you were stuck in a drain pipe? Moving on, so what am I not supposed to freak out about? This. Whoa, where did that picture of me and Jake come from? My parents were there, but they were in the visitor center when that happened. We were totally alone. Well, someone else must have been there. It goes with this article from Teen Scene Today. Jake's Mystery Girl by I. M. Sneaky Pete. Here at Teen Scene Today, we've been holding on to this juicy picture until we found out the mystery girl's identity. And thanks to none other than Jake's GF, Madison Waters, we finally have. In an exclusive interview, Madison said this. Yeah, I know her. She's that poor, sad girl who was always following my Jake around the set when we were filming in that sad little town. She kept falling down or swelling up. She was a mess. Jake took pity on her. So, there you have it, folks. You okay? Roar? Rory? I'm on my way.
David. 2. Linda at onlinefamilytherapy.com. From David Goldberg at willowfallschool.edu. Subject, checking in. Hello, my name is David Goldberg. You sent me a new patient questionnaire a while ago, and I'm still waiting to hear your response. Can you let me know when you'll be writing back? Thanks.
From Linda at onlinefamilytherapy.com to David Goldberg at willowfallschool.edu. Subject, regarding checking in. Dear David, we are very sorry for any confusion, but we have no record of you as a patient. Perhaps you signed up with a different online therapy program? If you are in need of our services, we are happy to help. Otherwise, best of luck to you. Sincerely, Linda, online family therapist.
Dear Linda, may I call you that? I'm not actually going to press send on this email anyway, so I guess it doesn't really matter. I could call you Linda, or Lynn, or Linny Lou, and you'd never know it. Ha ha, I crack myself up. Smiley face. I figured out why you have no record of me. It was wiped out, thanks to my friend Grace. More on her in a minute. So, Linda, you'll never guess what I've been doing since my last email. Even though you don't remember me filling out that questionnaire, I still remember. I've been very busy. After school, I've been delivering meals to old people and feeding meters on Main Street. Last weekend, I sang songs on the street corner to raise money for Dog Adoption Day at the animal shelter. And I'm allergic to dogs. You should consider adding allergies to your initial questionnaire. Basically, Linda, I'm doing my best to pay it forward. I'm trying to deserve the bounty of blessings that has come my way. You see, it was one thing when Grace and Angelina cured my dad of his disease. Yes, it's magic. How about that? That's another thing I can't tell you about, of course, but again, not hitting send. But then, to free him of the burden of knowing he'd been miraculously cured? What a truly astonishing gift. And I don't throw a word like astonishing around lightly. What 13-year-old boy does? But that's what it is. Until I saw my father that first morning after Grace's forgetting spell, I hadn't realized how hard his sudden recovery had been for him and how much she was covering that up for my sake. But that happy-to-be-alive glint was back in his eye, and a calmness that I hadn't seen all summer had settled on his face. When I was little and asked my mom why she took so many pictures and videos of me, she said parents are the keepers of their children's memories until they're old enough to hold their own. I'm the keeper of my family's memories.